A recent report on a 16-year-long experiment is gaining traction over the internet. For the past 16 years, the classrooms of a top high school in Sichuan province had been connected to those of 248 schools in rural areas across China via a computer screen. And this connection has changed the fate of many students who've previously didn't have access to the same education experience as those students living in urban areas. So, Lai Ming, I'll go to you first. What is this about?
Well, this is about an experiment, like you said, that was first introduced in 2002. And one of the best high schools in southwest China's Sichuan province, that's called Chengdu No. 7 High School, founded an online school which allowed students in rural areas to access some of their classes via live streaming. The live stream enables students with poor education resources to have classes, homework, and examinations simultaneously with mostly middle-class peers in Chengdu No. 7 High School. The school's program director claims that 72,000 students from 248 high schools have benefited from the online program since it started, and 88 of the 72,000 students got admission in Tsinghua and Peking universities, the two most prestigious universities in China. And most of the students went on to study in universities. In some cases, the rural schools had few or no students enter first-year universities for more than 10 years, but after joining up with the online school, admittance to universities increased by more than 10 times in some cases. So we can see a lot of changes has happened after this experiment was introduced in Chengdu No. 7 Middle School and also the 248 schools that joined the program.
That were miles away, that had such a different classroom setting and teachers, students, their lives are vastly different, mainly because, well, that we're talking about a top school in a city and the not so good schools in the rural areas. Nila, after looking at this story, what do you think? What was your initial reaction?
First of all, I thought about it and I thought, well, this is a really good initiative, especially for, personally, I grew up in the rural areas, and I think probably if we had such a similar thing, I probably would have performed much, much better in school. And you can obviously see from this study that there was a lot of improvements in terms of the number of students who performed really well. And I think this perhaps is because a lot of students were, for example, if you are growing in the rural areas, you don't have so much. You don't have access to so many tools or materials to help you advance your education well. So for them to be able to access like schools in the urban centers and see how they do their schools and how students there, or why the students there perform better, probably did have an effect on students in such a way that it motivated them even more because they want to be like their peers in the big city, and they can see that they're being seen as equals in terms of education. So I think that perhaps sort of implanted some motivation, which in the end also resulted in a lot of students, you know, having better grades.
That's a really spot on way of looking at this. And certainly I think a lot of people were applauding this experiment, and people were saying, how come I've only heard about this after 16 years? So Lai Ming, how come that a very innovative program like this one that's been going on for so long, but it's only recently become a topic of discussion?
Well, that's a very good question. And for one thing, there has been a lot of reports about this ongoing program. Actually, last year, there was a similar report on this thing, and somehow it didn't gain as much attraction as it did with this report. And I would say that initially, I had two reactions to this report. A few days ago, my wife told me about this story, and I sort of dismissed the story, saying, that's not an impressive story. I mean, only 88 students managed to make to Tsinghua or Beida over, well, how long? It's 16 years, and that's not impressive. And then on Friday, you were sitting next to me, mm-hmm. As I read the story, and you probably saw me almost moved to tears as I went through the story. And there are many things that got me in this report. You know, for one thing, that's the rich details in the way that the journalist was able to portray the impact or the changes that was brought about on those, all of those involved. And one of the things is, for instance, the students in rural areas who previously didn't have access to high quality education and all of a sudden were almost flung into in front of the screen where they could see the top students performing very well against challenging situations, meaning challenging questions being posed by their teachers. And this is happening in real time and in front of their eyes. And this is very refreshing, also familiar to me, in the sense that I think myself and also many of my former classmates in middle schools, we basically all grew up in rural area and in a school that didn't necessarily have the best resources. And in a sense, we had to struggle to sort of in order to survive the upcoming college entrance examination. And we knew that there's a huge gap. We knew there's a huge gap between the resources we had access to and those students who were living probably in urban areas. And at that time, we were mostly working on this textbook or this question book compiled by teachers in Haidian Huangzhuang. So that's a very famous district in downtown Beijing, very well known for the quality of education resources. And we knew there was a huge gap, but we didn't know specifically exactly how different we were from the students, say, that were studying in Haidian Huangzhuang in Beijing. We didn't know in specificity. Whereas, unfortunately, for kids who are sitting in front of a screen that sort of show the students having a good time, challenging themselves with the teachers, and they could also see the questions themselves watching the live stream, and I could totally feel their frustration when they find out that they could not even wrap their brains around the questions or around what is being imparted at the classroom. I can sense the frustration. Mm-hmm. And as a result, I was also motivated by the students who somehow survived disillusionment, who sort of survived the disappointment in themselves and decided to work very hard to catch up with the students who are top students, who were certainly out of league for them.
I think this is certainly one of the very heartfelt stories that received sort of like explosive reactions from Chinese readers, viewers, online and offline. And the reason why a report as such that was done by China Youth Daily, and I have to say it had soft to the journalists that wrote this investigative report, is it really humanized this situation when we talk about ginormous gap in education, poor classroom condition, and a vast difference in educational quality. That doesn't really register with people. But when you tell the story of these kids that go to rural schools, that there's never been even one person that's gotten to even the first tier of colleges here in China for years. And students that finish these question papers, but sometimes don't even get the questions, their answers graded because the teachers might be just not working very hard or not paying much attention, because this is like a two-way thing. The teachers aren't seeing a lot of really bright students that are getting to college, and then the teachers might not be working very hard either to be very inspiring. So it's like a very complicated issue. And when these students get to see on a computer screen that miles away in a city in this top school, that peers of the same age, they sit in a well-air-conditioned classroom, which they probably don't have, and these people are challenging the teachers as well. They're not just passively receiving information, and they talk about their own experiences of and they draw from these experiences in answering a lot of the really tough questions. And then they see in front of their very eyes on this computer screen that life can be so vastly different, and that becomes a moment that that can be a little bit cruel sometimes.
Very cruel, to the point that they were in this report, the journalist mentioned some of the students resort to crying after attending one or two of these classes. And then this total description about how their confidence in themselves had been completely shattered, and then they have to reconstruct their confidence again. And then to see them deciding to work extra hard, I mean, they were already working very hard, to work extra hard, for instance, not getting 6 hours sleep every day, that sort of thing. To see them working so hard, making that decision to really go for what they wanted, and to try to narrow the gap between the students in top schools, that determination and the amount of hard work being put in there really is very motivating to whoever that's reading the story. Mm-hmm. And one typical example is a top student in one of those remote schools who she was the number one student at the school. And then when she had to do the homework and sit the examinations, the same examination test and paper being done by the top students, she only get a D. That's the best result she got, a D in the Chinese language. And for other subjects, she all got Fs. Mm-hmm. So it was a very, very traumatic experience, I would say, to those students. And I admire the students who managed to survive the blow and then decided to move on.
Mm. Well, Nila, do you think... Okay, I'm curious to hear what you make of it. So basically, in the past, let's say I was... you know, the top student in my school and in a little village. And after seeing what the top school is like in Sichuan province, I realized that I used to be top of my pack, but now I'm actually kind of far behind if I'm placing myself with a different group of people in that urban city. So, I mean, that really shifts the axis of a person, a kid in this kind of situation. I mean, do you think this is a good way of motivation, or is this a good move in education?
I think it is a good move, but it's at the end of the day, you have to realize that when it comes to education, there are different students. There are students who are really good academic-wise. There are students who are academically challenged. So I'm looking it to be a motivation for the students who are very very good in academics. And of course, it's in human nature that when your ability is challenged, you're not going to feel good about yourself. But then it's just a feeling for the moment. But then if you're a student and you really are motivated and you have a goal to reach and you want to be like these students in the urban centers, then yes, you will feel bad, but then it will actually push you to perform even better than them. It creates some sort of competition because now you have access to similar materials. You have access to similar tools, even though it's virtual for you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it will instill some level of competition in students who really want to do well in academics. And at the end of the day, it's not... that's why, like Liming, you said, only 88 students made it into top universities over a period of 16 years. It's only these 88 students who are really, really motivated, and perhaps they had a goal. They want to go to the best university in the country, which is in the urban center. And for the only way for me to do this, I have to work really hard and I have to compete with the students that I see over a screen. So they look at themselves, they don't pity themselves. Instead of like sitting there and, you know, wallowing into self-pity, they take that advantage of what they have been given, that extra advantage they have, to work just as hard.
That's well said. And I suppose this is a great motivation for the really bright and driven kids. But here's the question. What about most of the kids. I mean, is this kind of program only motivating or only the brightest get to shine? And then what about the vast majority of people who might not benefit as much? I mean, what do you think this program can de facto do to these kids that are experiencing this mind-opening and eye-opening experience?
That is a very, very good question. And in fact, many scholars who don't feel like they want to stand behind this project and applaud it are raising this point that actually maybe this plan is only good for orange students who are motivated in themselves, who want to become a better version of themselves, who want to constantly challenge themselves. Only those kind of people, they can survive the initial blow and then pick up the pieces and then decide to move on. Whereas average students at the depth of the blow, I mean, they probably would just become totally frustrated and their sentiment can never be pieced together again. But we have to look at the details more specifically. Actually, even in the 248 schools that are supposed to be in remote areas, there's a selection process. They only find the best and brightest students in those schools, and they have them grouped together in one class, and it's those students who will face the challenges. Whereas the average students, they will follow the traditional way of teaching. And actually, another thing that really got me from the story was the changes that being brought on to the teachers who were previously working at the 248 schools. I mean, they obviously were dealt a heavy blow as well, and being compared to, let's say, a top teacher in a top school in an urban area. So at some point, they were just as disillusioned and also frustrated as the teachers they were teaching. And some of them really survived the blow and decided to find a role for themselves. I mean, here is the very difficult question. When most of the classes are being live streamed from a remote school, you pretty much don't have much to do in the classroom. So some teachers decided not to even show up and just let the students watch the live stream, and that's the job done. Whereas for those tough teachers who wanted to challenge themselves, they sort of find new roles for themselves. They decided that they had a part to play in helping the students reconstruct their confidence to get back on their feet. And in fact, enjoying this program, many of the teachers got better trained, and they got even better motivated in the sense that they were willing to take up two or three times the job of their counterparts and their peers in the same schools. And so in this result, many good teachers came out of this program.
Yeah. So my question is, I'm struggling to understand, are these classes live streamed from morning to evening? So it's just constantly being live streams, or is it just specific periods of time and specific subjects?
It's the same curriculum. So every class will be streamed, and only the only difference is the only every session of a class would last for 45 minutes, but the live stream will last for 40 minutes, leaving 5 minutes for teachers on the spot to do some explanation work and that sort of thing. So, because when we talk about education, we can't really say, oh, we have the best teacher coming from, let's say, Chengdu or from Beijing, and they know everything about teaching, and let's just have them teach our students. That's not necessary, or that's not even possible, because every student is different.
Because I'm just trying to, like, in my own experience, we had kind of a similar thing, and this used to happen only on specific days with specific subjects. But of course, in those days when I was in primary school, we didn't have computers, we didn't have access to that. We did have access to radio, though. So the teacher, it was organized by the government, the entire thing. So at certain periods of day, all classroom, all public schools were allowed to have a virtual teacher teaching on radio for like an hour. So students will listen, and then the teachers will have questions after the live stream has ended or the mm-hmm. lesson has ended. And then it's your teacher now to discuss the points of the previous classroom. So I'm not really sure if it's very similar, although I think the current one, like what they're doing now, is much, much better.
Obviously, even in China, we talk about 寒授学校. So I assume, and judging by the letter or the literal meaning of the sentence, I assume is education through the respondents.
Maybe by writing letters, yeah.
Correspondence. Yeah, so, and then over time, we had Open University over the television, and now it seems technology has just created another way for us to do this.
Yes, in a mind-blowing way. Certainly, in a fashion that is real-time, and when you can actually see, mm-hmm. witness the whole process, and then it's going to take you by a completely different effect. And Liming, the part that you talked about and also made me very emotional when I was reading all the research papers regarding the subject is the initial heavy blow. And that word kept on coming up. And the part that I suppose some people who are not familiar with this educational subject in China might be wondering, why this big blow? How big is this gap? How come it seems like people are knocked over their feet when they see the best in the country as they compare to what they have?
Well, a lot of those who are not familiar with China's education system is that it is developing fast, as if not faster than China's economy is developing. So what we have is maybe in urban areas, you have, since the economy develops and some schools can afford better resources to attract better teachers, and they also have very generous package plans in terms of how they attract the best students. So in some cases, when we talk about a school that's lag behind, it's not necessarily because the students in the region overall have lagged behind compared to students in urban areas. But in fact is that maybe there's this sucking energy coming from the best schools who will aspire to be even better, and they give bonus to students who perform very well. They get invitation. They give invitation to the best students in the region. And as a result, the best and brightest students will not be attending the local school. And that really deals a heavy blow to the teachers, because when you're teaching students who are not necessarily responsive, who don't react to whatever you were saying, you don't get enough reward. Mm-hmm. I mean, here in China, we talk about how the most rewarding part is getting the best students and enlighten them. Yeah. And when you don't get that, you sort of close off. You lose your creativity mm-hmm. in the teachers. So it's a very, very vicious circle.
And that's part of the developmental picture of rural schools in the last 10 years. So you get these super schools and, sucking the lifeblood from the village schools or the less prominent schools. And another thing is, as this live streaming of courses made it apparent that in cities, I think when parents are maybe a little bit more educated and mm-hmm. have time to mm-hmm. or make time to spend with their children, the focus, the attention kids get, and the sometimes travel experience that they get, it's so different from what rural kids, when sometimes parents aren't even living with them, can receive. So we need to see some fundamental changes, I think, and support for rural schools, or as more and more kids move into cities, things can become a little bit better in that regard. You're listening to Roundtable. We'll be back after this short break.